The Alex Goldstein Property Show. Stray FM.
Welcome again to the Alex Goldstein Property Show. I'm Alex Goldstein of Alex Goldstein Property Consultants in Harrogate, and this is the fast-paced property show giving you industry expert insight into the world of property, estate agency, and the related business sectors within it. Insider tips, tricks, and know-how are all jam-packed into the show so you can make the best informed decision when it comes to buying or selling your home. Whether you're a first-time buyer, upsizer, downsizer, experienced property developer, have a portfolio empire, or just simply have an interest in the local and national property market, then this is the show for you. I will be speaking with and getting industry expert advice from some of the most successful property-related businesses and professionals that Yorkshire and indeed the UK has to offer, ranging from regional chartered surveyors all the way through to some of the UK's most well-renowned multinational firms. We are available for podcast download on the first day of every month, so make sure you sign up to the Alex Goldstein and Stray FM social media accounts to get an early reminder of this and to get great property tips whenever you need. In this month's show, we will be getting the inside track from global heavyweight giants in the accountancy and personal services sector, PwC, PricewaterhouseCooper, where we have Chris Etherington, a senior manager on their private client team in Leeds, here talking through the hot topics of the day in the financial sector, such as offshore funding, tax planning, and all the news in the press about tax avoidance currently. We will be also getting to grips with how to stay at the forefront of an agent's mind when they're selling your home as part of our property hospital section. Plus, we're putting Sharon Wright from DH Wright Joinery in the hot seat to get clarity on why a wood product she uses has a 60-year guarantee. You did hear that correctly. We, of course, also have the Alex Goldstein top tips. So much to cram in, so let's get straight into the property news.
Property news with Alex Goldstein.
Stray FM.
This month, we are discussing the current government intervention in the property market. Now, let's face it, it doesn't matter whether it's our sugar intake, the cars we drive, or consumption of fruit each day, the government surely has our best interests at heart. After all, a 3% stamp duty surcharge for second home and additional property purchases, and a further tax on what's deemed to be the well-off, can only be a good thing, right? The government are just trying to help first-time buyers get on the property ladder. Seems fair, doesn't it? In addition to the above taxation, there's tougher buy-to-let lending criteria now, curtailing of mortgage interest relief, plus capital gains tax, or CGT, has effectively seen an 8% increase as residential property sales are excluded from the recent overall reduction in the tax. So what is the government's problem, and why are they doing this? In simple terms, they feel that property investors have a competitive advantage over the first-time buyer, and they are targeting the same types of properties. The government wants greater home ownership and to create a more stable economy, so that if times ever got tough again, we're well sheltered from the storm. Sounds all sensible so far. And by putting off some investors with higher upfront costs, it will mean that the first-time buyers can get on the property ladder. However, there are actually greater issues at hand here, and let me explain. The government have effectively put the brakes on buy-to-let investors. This has choked up the supply of rental properties. So of course, if there's a shortage of supply, tenant demand is going to increase. When this happens, the amount of rent payable each month is going to go up. So if you're a tenant and your rent has gone up, how are you going to afford to pay for your first home? Don't worry, the government say. Here is the new lifetime ISA and an increase on the annual ISA limit. However, to my mind, this still doesn't solve the issue, as if I'm a tenant, how can I still afford to put money aside each month into my brand new fancy ISA if my rent has gone up? I argue that we are still left with the same issue of people trying to get on the property ladder because saving for deposits and tougher lending criteria means that it remains an uphill struggle. Time will, of course, tell on this, but I hope the government have got their watchful eye on what I see as a brewing issue. It's great here to have Chris Etherington from PricewaterhouseCooper in Leeds. And Chris, getting straight to the heart of it, I know everyone's really heard of PwC and Price Waterhouse, and it's one of those massive UK names. But what underneath it all do you actually do?
Thanks for inviting me on, Alex. So, yeah, PwC, I mean, it's one of those words that you see bandied around in the press around being, you know, we're just a large accountancy firm. Yeah. We work with huge global conglomerates and things like that, and it's actually, like you say, it's a bit impenetrable as to what do we actually do. So in terms of getting down to the nuts and bolts of it, we're essentially problem solvers. I mean, we do a whole variety of things. I can list, you know, a whole different load of different services that we do. So, you know, I do tax advice, we do legal advice, we do investment advice, we do deals, we help people buy and sell companies. We do the boring stuff like the accountancy. Now, my colleagues in accounting won't thank me for saying it's boring, but, you know, that is what we're known for. But we do so much more. You know, we help people get debt funding, a whole host. So
it's sort of numbers and a bit beyond.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Obviously, numbers-based, but we're not all just mathematicians. You know, yeah. So.
Possible common misconception is the types of clients that you help, and I know you've mentioned, look, you do help some of the UK's best names out there, but just give people a feel, because obviously you've got those people, but I've picked up that there is actually a bit of a slant and a change at the moment.
Well, to tell you what I do, I mean, I just work with individuals, and most people would be surprised to hear that, probably. I've spent the last decade of my life sitting at the same desk helping clients of all shapes and sizes, if you like. So I've got clients who are, you know, guys in their bedroom with an internet business to 98-year-old grannies. So, you know, there's all sorts. And it's not just your high net worth Russian oligarchs or what you might think it might be.
Common misconception. It's great to clear that one up. And what about companies on the company side? Because, again, you're often seen to be acting for some of the big guys out there. But I think it's fair to be said at the moment you're quite interested as a company in the SMEs of this world.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you just took what we call it as private business, and what that basically means is working with individuals, typically owners of managed businesses and privately owned businesses. And if you took that out of PwC in itself, that would probably be the fifth largest accountancy firm in the country, just that bit of PwC. Is that, I mean, we do a lot. If you look at how many FTSE 100 companies are there in Yorkshire? There's some, but there's not a huge amount. So over two-thirds of what we do is working with entrepreneurs and their businesses. And that's not just huge ones. It's tech startups to very large privately owned businesses. So it's everything in between.
If you are a small, medium-sized business, why would you look to the PwCs rather than, say, accountancy firm down the street, so to speak? What is the difference? What are you actually getting?
At the end of the day, I mean, you got the benefit of having somebody that is focused on the SME market, but has the benefit of having a global firm behind them. So we can help you from day one as you grow and invest our time. We're quite happy to invest time to start with certain businesses, you know. So I've got a lot of guys who are tech startups, and there's not a huge amount that I'm going to be doing for them, but I just spend time with them on a day-to-day basis and help them grow with them. And in the future, there might be an opportunity for me to help them with something.
And I suppose from what you previously said, it's the fact that you've got all these different departments and subdivisions and all different types.
Yeah, so say somebody's trying to export to a European country, for example, you know, and they've never done it before. Well, we've got offices all over the world. I can pick up the phone to somebody and find someone over there that can help them with that.
Yeah, so you're getting the PwC network, which you can't obviously get from your high street guy, and you are the one stop sort of financial shop, so to speak.
That's why I said basically we're problem solvers. So if you have a problem with your business, generally I can find an expert, because it's such a big firm, there's usually somebody who does and everything, you know, little niche expert. I mean, I've been firm for over a decade. I still don't know what we do. You know, it's so much there. Yeah. But usually if you pick up the phone, there's somebody that I can turn to or something. Mm.
And just talk us through, because it's very much a hot topic at the moment, this whole sort of tax avoidance. You've obviously got all the Panama Papers. You've got David Cameron supposedly being caught out, according to some of the papers. Emma Watson, the actress, she again bought it through the Panama company. What's the viewpoint on this? Because, again, I think it's very much a misconception when people sort of talk about taxation and the different structures. Talk us through what is legal, what's illegal, what's the grey area?
Yeah. I mean, it's a hot potato, a bit of a minefield to go through. And it obviously sells papers, and that's why it's been all over the press for the last 5 or so years. Before then, I think the tax world was very different. Broadly, the important point to know is tax evasion, and that's the really bad thing. That's illegal.
That's the key word. Yep.
That's illegal. Mm-hmm. Now, tax avoidance, that's legal. So one is a criminal matter. If you're doing tax evasion, there's still plenty of people out there doing that. I mean, if you look at what the budgets and things set when the Chancellor stands up with his little red box and so on, he says how much I'm going to recover from tax evasion. There's plenty of people out there doing
and
that.
And that's effectively money laundering. That's criminal. Which is the
illegal it can include money laundering. It can just people not paying their tax, basically defrauding the government.
Yeah, and then the difference then flipping over to the avoidance.
And obviously we don't do any of the tax.
Clearly.
Tax avoidance is much broader term. So and again, that is bandied around and it is becoming more of a dirty word in itself. And it comes down to confusion that you mentioned.
Yeah,
it's how do people understand what is genuinely just financial planning, and what is avoidance? And if you look at sort of what the law says, there's case law basically going back donkey's years, which goes along the lines of, and I'll probably paraphrase badly, that somebody is entitled to arrange their affairs in a way that helps to minimise their tax exposure. That's perfectly legitimate. But if Parliament didn't intend this to happen, are you manipulating the rules? Are you finding a loophole and exploiting it?
Okay.
That's tax avoidance in their view, and they don't like that for obvious reasons. It's not what they want. Whereas they are obviously happy with financial planning. I mean, tax avoidance is so broad, you could say, investing in an ISA. That, in a sense, is...
You are arranging your
circumstances to pay less tax because there is a government-sponsored tax relief there. You can invest in a wrapper like that.
So it's effectively your role to take and do the tax advice and take you, your client, and their pot of money, no matter what it is, and take it up to the line that is set out effectively by HMRC, but you don't cross it because then, as you said, you're getting into serious sort of nitty-gritty territory and you're bound to be caught out. And that's where, if you like, the Daily Mails of this world and the media have picked up on it and arguably twisted the facts slightly.
Ultimately, it comes down to there are thousands of pages of legislation now. It's impossible for the layman on the street, ordinary citizen, to understand really what the tax rules are. I mean, it's so complex now. And when I started, he had a couple of books, and it's now 12. It's impossible. I can't read all of that. You have to have specialists in each individual field, and some of just doing stuff like a tax return for some people was impossible because there's absolutely no way you can self-assess without some help.
Yeah.
So a lot of what we do is actually just try and help people understand what the rules are.
It brings us on, I suppose, nicely in terms of, again, another term that's sort of banded around predominantly by the media in terms of offshore funds, whereby you sort of say, well, I've got my pot of money and it's held in the Channel Islands or it's over in the British Virgin Islands and all of that. And again, it's tarnished with a similar sort of brush. Are those sort of setups legal, illegal? Mm-hmm. What are the advantages? What are the disadvantages? I mean, again, it's a term possibly misunderstood, but where are we at the moment in terms of legislation and what's possible?
Yeah. So, I mean, like you say, there's a lot of attention on things like Panama. Before then, there was non-DOMs that came up in the election campaigns and stuff. And a lot of these terms are thrown out into the press and it's like, oh, no, the non-DOMs are bad. Panama's obviously bad. Offshore structure, that's awful, And the trouble is, a lot of people aren't really interested in the detail. I love tax, but a lot of people don't. Yeah, I know. I'm fairly unique and I chose to do this. Most people fall into the profession, unless you get really into the detail. And a lot of, that's not going to sell papers, is it, if you're going to get really into the detail of it? Mm. So it is quite easy for things to get misconstrued. I mean, just turning to the Panama situation and David Cameron. So he invested in, essentially, shares in an offshore vehicle. It was set up by his father. I don't know all the details. I haven't looked at it in that much, in all the specifics. But broadly, it was an entity which paid UK tax. It was distributing its income each year, and David Cameron would have had to declare that on his tax return. So that is the same as you investing in a blue chip company on the stock exchange, as anybody else would. You can do that in an ISA or whatever. If it's paying the same amount as UK tax as it would be in a UK entity, then what's the problem? But people see offshore and tax evasion and tax avoidance
and it groups it all.
And you just read the headline, don't you?
Yeah.
Sometimes there are things to be uncovered, and it's perfectly legitimate for people to look at Panama, things like that, and see if there is. Yeah, I'm sure there will be untoward things that are in there to be uncovered. You know, it's 11 million documents, I think. It's going to take somebody with a fine tooth comb to go through it all. But
time will tell on that one. Time will tell. Bring it back round in terms of sort of property investment, again, the buzzwords is sort of how you structure it for tax efficiency, capital gains, inheritance tax, company structures. How do you actually sort of structure purchases nowadays? Because again, there's so many sort of obstacles. Are there sensible ways, obviously above board, as we've said, that you can actually structure that purchase? What should one actually look out for as a property investor at the moment?
Okay. Ultimately, it's a bit fob you off a little bit. It really comes down to your personal circumstances. There's not a one set of rules. This is the right thing for a property investor to do. You know, if you're one person's situation may be completely different to another person's. You might have somebody who's married and in a property partnership, say. You might have somebody who's just doing it by themselves. You know, you have to take all of that into account. I mean, if you're married, you might think about things like, you know, who's earning more. So, a lot of the changes at high level are, some of the bigger ones that were announced were around restricting the amount of relief that you can get on your mortgage payments. So that's going to be restricted to basic rate. So, 20% relief, essentially, whereas in the past you would have got 40%, or if you're an additional rate taxpayer, if you're lucky enough to be one, 45% relief. So that's a big dip in terms of how much it's coming phased in. So over the next couple of years, it will come 75%, 50%, 25%. Yeah. I won't throw numbers around, but in those circumstances, you might look, well, okay, if my wife isn't earning anything, well, maybe she should own some of the properties. If we're going to acquire some more, maybe she should do it rather than me. The issues with stamp duty land tax are interesting. I mean, you've got obviously this new 3% surcharge.
Yeah.
From the people I've spoken to, it's not necessarily something that will change the behaviour that they're looking at.
You know, I agree.
It's more a case of, this is an extra cost we're going to have to incur. It's part of it's like a business expense. You know, it's just something that we have to take into account when we're setting our rents and so on to try and get the right sort of profit in the long term.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, I think whilst the idea is to disincentivise, I guess, the landlord and buy-to-let market, I suspect it will just be passed on to the tenants in due course.
Yeah, quite. That's my fear. But again, we will see, because it's very early days. Talk us through, Chris, because I know a lot of people are banding around ideas of, if we're looking to buy property, we'll put it in a limited company structure, and there's sort of limited liability partnerships and all of that. If one is looking to acquire properties, what are the things you actually need to think through in the structures as well?
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got to think about what's commercial first, what's good for you. I mean, there are benefits to being in a company, there are benefits of being in a partnership, things like limited protections, one. But, there's also things like, who's going to lend money to me? I mean, it's easy to obtain finance when you're an individual through buy-to-let mortgages. It might start to get harder, but it's my understanding is it's harder to do it through a company than it is. The tax things to think about are, there are some tax changes, and not all of those tax changes apply to the companies, in particular that mortgage interest one's a big one.
Yeah.
So there's a distinction there. If you can get lending through a company, and actually some people are actually so worse off that after these tax changes come through in earnest, once they've been phased in, you could end up making a loss after after the tax cost.
Right. Okay.
So that in itself could mean that you basically there's no point being in business, frankly. Yeah. So what are you going to do about it? And one of the considerations might be, well, can I incorporate? Well, that might be one route. You've got to think about what the other implications are, the stamp duty land tax issues and so on. Like I said before, what you've got to do is look at your individual circumstances and then decide which structure is best from the outset.
Yeah, and take some pretty specialist advice as well, because again, the great thing with PwC is just so many different departments and areas of expertise. You've just got to declare everything from your personal circumstances and really, I think, hand it over to you guys you to navigate through.
Obviously, I'd be happy to do that. The key thing is taking that sort of advice earlier on rather than later. It's much easier to plan for the future than it is trying to unravel something from the past.
Yeah, no, quite. And I mean, it's been really insightful, and thank you very much indeed for your time. If anyone's got any sort of questions or queries, both I suppose from a personal perspective and also the sort of the company side and tax structures that we've sort of run through, what's the best way for people to reach you?
You can give me a call, and my direct telephone number is 0113 0208-289-4895, or normal routes, you can reach us through the website pwc.co.uk.
That's fantastic. Really appreciate your time, Chris. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
The Property Hospital, Stray FM.
In the Property Hospital, I get to answer your property problems.
Alex, I'm on the market with an estate agent at the moment and things are ticking along, but how can I continue to get the best out of them and ensure that they're always pushing my property?
Linda, great question. One of the best things you can actually do is get the front of house team or the office-based staff to view your home. The more staff that have seen it, the more they're going to remember it and they're then going to mention it to the buyers out there. The other thing is, I think you need to stay in regular touch with your agent, but do keep it brief each time. Remember, agents are salespeople and they're often short of time, so having a 30-minute telephone call is just going to clog them up. And let's face it, I'd much rather that they were using that 30 minutes on the phone selling your property. So really keep it short and sweet with the communication. That's the key. And again, on that point, just remember, estate agency, it's a people business, so therefore be nice, as I know you would be, but people always go out of their way to help anyone that's great to get on with, and keep a solid, personable rapport with the agent. And really, ultimate tip and trick here, to stay front of mind with your agent, go and buy them some cake. And seriously, I do mean that. Pop by the baker's, get them a selection of cakes in a box, and drop by the office and to say that you were thinking of them. So when they're eating them and the other office staff are asking where do these cakes come from, they're discussing you and your home. And again, in other words, you are front of their mind and you're being a great client. And therefore, they will continue to go above and beyond for you. I really hope this helps.
The Property Hot Seat. Stray FM.
Name.
Sharon Wright.
Business.
David H. Wright Joinery.
Time in property.
I've been in the business for 28 years.
Just sort of talking all of this through, I know people possibly have this misconception about what joinery actually is. And as soon as you mention a specialist, what is it that you actually do and offer?
Right, well, as a bespoke joinery manufacturer, we manufacture all types of products, windows, doors, orangeries, conservatories. We work on heritage work, all types of different woods.
I dare say, being a specialist, you get involved with a lot of sort of older properties, listed properties. Is that something that you sort of go into, and what are the sort of the details that you need to sort of secure off an owner?
Absolutely. When a property is in a conservation area, or indeed it is a listed building, then the attention to detail, we have to be very careful what we're actually putting into that building. We have to improve it sympathetically with our windows. So the attention to detail is paramount. We have to make sure that we get all the mouldings correct, that we're using the correct timbers. We've got to pay special attention to the paint finishes, the colours that are really important.
I guess it just goes into the sort of the legal side of things. If you get it wrong, you and the owner are liable, and you've got the council and authorities to answer to. That's
absolutely
the bottom line.
Absolutely. It can be a very expensive mistake.
What are the considerations that you need to do when sort of making applications to the local authority? If you wanted to change any sort of windows, doors, maybe even you could get conservatory or orangery, what do you actually need to sort of think through as an owner, and indeed yourself as a business?
We have to be very careful, because the local authority want to preserve the heritage of the building, and also that with conservation areas they want to preserve the area to make sure that it's maintained, it's kept beautiful, and all the buildings are sympathetic to the area. So we have to make sure that, one, the windows are copied exactly as they were before.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be a 1700 property, it doesn't have to be a Georgian property or a Victorian property. Mm. It might be that it's a 1920s, 1930s property.
Just in the conservation areas.
Absolutely.
You mentioned, and you've still
Absolutely.
Got to tread carefully. I mean,
yes.
What happens, for example, I know there's some fantastic properties that have stained glass, and they're incredibly difficult to get right and copy nowadays. Mm-hmm. Is there a way that you can get around that from your perspective?
Absolutely. So the glazing is very, very important as well. So say if you've got a property that's got beautiful stained glass windows in, and the client wants to still have the double glazed units, then what we can do is we can encompass that into the double glazed unit.
Right.
So we send them away to a very, very clever man in Leeds that repairs the original stained glass. It then encapsulates make that into a double glaze unit. So you've got the benefit of a very, very modern window in a traditional style.
You've got the best of everything.
Best of all worlds.
I know you sort of talked about the difference of timber types, and I think this is a really interesting subject. Just tell everyone the sort of the wood types and the differences that you work with, because again, some of it's quite surprising, I think.
Well, you've got to be really, really careful when you're looking at buying a window, whether that's for a new build or we're looking at heritage type buildings. There's a lot of softwood products out there, which they're okay, but when you're wanting to have a beautiful window done, then you want to have the best wood that you can have.
Yeah, and people often sort of throw around the term it's oak, but I guess there's oak and there's oak. What are the differences?
Well, you have European oak and American oak, both really, really great timbers, but you wouldn't want to be using American oak outside because it's just not capable of our weathers, do you know what I mean, to use outside. So it's great to use that timber, American oak, but on inside products such as staircases and internal doors, that sort of products. But as far as any external work, then you really have to use a European oak.
Talk me through, because I felt that this was absolutely fantastic, this sort of fairly new product that's out there, sort of Accoya.
Yeah.
Talk everyone through this, because I know I've been saying to everyone, well, look, there's a 60-year guarantee, which I think is quite something. Just talk everyone through exactly what that is and why there is that guarantee in place.
Yeah. I'm so excited about this product. It really, really is a great product. What happens, it's a softwood timber. Accoya is not a tree. It's a softwood, which is farm grown in New Zealand. And what they do is they take all the, you know, your DNA, take all the DNA out of the timber.
Yeah.
And it goes through a process which enables that timber then to be very, very stable. So you can put a piece of timber, measure it before you put it in some water, put it in water, leave it for 6 months, Alex, and take it back out. It won't have swollen, it won't have moved, it won't have done anything. So it's a great stable timber.
But it's wood, it's not sort of injected with anything strange.
Yes,
it's just the way they've actually treated it at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And so it's a fantastic product. So we use it for doors. The bifolding doors is absolutely great because we can get the tolerances really down to a fine line. It's great for sliding sash windows, because what we do also, we use a product called Tri-Accoya, which is also great, which is made of all the sweepings up of Accoya into an MDF board. So that's great for when we do orangeries or conservatories, great for the big timber posts that we're using. We use that instead of big timber posts, and we know we're not getting any swelling or movement. So it really is a fantastic product.
Doesn't rot, doesn't move, doesn't split, doesn't do anything apart from when you've cut it to size, it just completely stays in place.
Absolutely.
And it's six-zero year guarantee.
Absolutely.
I don't know any other product probably in the world that has that sort of length of guarantee. That is something quite special. And then over the top of it, I know we've sort of chatted in the past sort of about the paint that you can also then again incorporate, not necessarily on the top of Accoya, but the other products that you use. Again, talk everyone through that.
Well, we work with a company called Technos, and that company provide a microporous paint system. Now, just explain a little bit more in detail than that. That is a water-based system which will actually moves with the timber. So if we're, for instance, looking at Sapele hardwood, then you get up to a 10-year lifespan on the Sapele hardwood. With softwood, you get up to a 10-year lifespan with that. But with Accoya, you get up to a 15-year lifespan on your paint system.
And that is just on the paint itself, regardless of the wood, that is just on the paint.
Just on the paint, yeah.
Again, that is quite a combination. So again, if you're doing anything sort of specialist or that's going to take a bit of a hit, so to speak, I think that is really the product to go for. I know, again, everyone sort of talks about UPVC windows and sort of timber windows, and bear in mind the products on the timber side that you're using. What are the advantages, as you would see it, in terms of putting in timber windows over UPVC?
So if you are doing a project, firstly, if it's in a conservation area or you're a listed building, you're not allowed to use UPVC.
True.
And you can really be caught out by spending money and then having to put
and then
new windows
and
in
then
again.
advice
thing,
and with yourself.
So, be very careful with that. So that's the first thing. Also, the attention to details. With a plastic window, you can't get the really nice mouldings on the windows themselves. And also, with a wooden window, they're endorsed by the WWF and Greenpeace, so they're much more environmentally friendly. Of course, if we put them into landfill, they don't rot. So for the environmentalists, that is very, very important.
And I suppose the design element as well, from your perspective, because I think you've got a fleet of people behind the scenes, so if you want any design under the sun, then pretty much it's all possible.
Absolutely. And what we've got to take into consideration as well is that the people that are trained by us are apprentice trained really from school, and they're craftspeople. And so the windows that we're manufacturing are really, really difficult to make. And so the attention to detail is paramount, and with a plastic window, really anybody could make.
Yeah, no, quite. And what's the training? What's the length of year, out of interest, when you say a sort of a craftsman? How many years?
So we're talking about 7 years.
So as long as that.
It's a long time.
Yes. Well, no, it's been fascinating to talk to you, and it's some really interesting products to use, and I'm sure you'll have some great interest on that. What are the best ways for people to get hold of you?
You can give me a call. The best number to get me on is 01977 681832, or the website is dhwjoinery.co.uk.
Sharon, great to see you. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much for having me, Alex.
Alex Goldstein's top tip.
This month we ask ourselves, what is the only question you need to ask the manager of your estate agency office when they're looking to sell your property? That is, what is their experience in estate agency? Now, let me explain. For example, I had a case a couple of years back, and I'm completely out of area. A homeowner rang me and they were struggling to sell their property. The area was great, great property, right price. I just personally couldn't understand why it hadn't sold and something wasn't right. Cue a meeting with the estate agent, who also was the manager of that office. Excellent salesperson, full of enthusiasm, couldn't fault him. However, once I'd actually cut through all of that and asked his experience in the sector, his response was that he used to work for Cirque du Soleil, the circus people in their marketing team. He was literally a clown. He fancied having a go at estate agency and bought himself a franchise. And whilst he could buy a franchise opportunity, and he really was an excellent salesperson, he could not buy hands-on experience. And this is why the sale in this instance had faltered. And as the manager leading his team, if there was an issue or to have the foresight to see a problem potentially cropping up on the horizon, he was instantly out of his depth, and therefore so was the rest of his team. Whilst those new to estate agency is a great thing, they need to be backed up by a leader with experience. And some of the most powerful agents have the young negotiator, who's enthusiastic, full of energy. It's then backed up and tempered by the manager. And these guys have the years of experience and know-how. Together, the combined skills can be a very formidable force when selling your home. However, no experience at the top can only lead to issues down the line. Remember, time and experience in any job can only be earned and never bought. That's all from the Alex Goldstein Property Show. More details, tips, tricks, and industry expert advice can be found on the website alexgoldstein.co.uk, and of course all my social media channels. Alternatively, drop me a line on alex@alexgoldstein.co.uk. The next episode is out on the 1st of July, so make sure you tune in for that. Until next time.